This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents French Kissing Season 4. Written by Harper Bliss. Performed by Abby Craden.
Episode 15. Dominique stretched her legs and breathed out a sigh. She held open her arms, indicating to Steph she should come lie in them. "I'm going to ask Solange to make room for this in my schedule more often," she said.
"Really?"
Steph looked her in the eyes.
"You just came and Solange is the first person you think of?"
She sported a small smile on her face.
"Oh, chérie, come here."
Dominique pulled her close.
"I didn't know you were so jealous of my chief of staff."
Dominique kissed Steph on the side of her face.
"When I count up the hours she gets to spend with you?"
Steph planted a soft kiss on Dominique's shoulder.
"Anyway, you should do it. In fact, I'll arrange it. I'll give her a call first thing tomorrow."
Steph snickered.
"Please don't. She won't be able to look at me all day."
"Because nothing upsets Solange Garceau more than the merest hint of the existence of sexuality," Steph said. "I would actually be doing her a favor by reminding her there's such a thing as physical intimacy. Truth be told, she looks like she could use a bit of it. Either that, or you work her too hard."
And here we are, in the aftermath of my glorious climax, still talking about her.
Dominique turned on her side and glued her naked body to Steph's.
"Would you rather we talk about someone else?"
Steph pulled her lips into that smile that had seduced many a woman.
"Let me think about it for a second."
She kissed Dominique on the nose.
"I'd rather talk about us. Or about you."
"Really? President Laroche doesn't want to talk about herself? That would be a first."
"Now you're just goading me."
Dominique tried to hold Steph's gaze.
"You're not free of vanity, babe. There's no such thing in politics."
"Let's talk about you then."
Dominique smiled away Steph's comment.
"Tell me all the things I've missed while I was busy presiding over our nation. I want to hear the most mundane thing you can think of."
"Juliet brought her dog into the office this morning," Steph said matter-of-factly.
Dominique closed her eyes for a second and, when she opened them again, relished the sight of Steph. They didn't have enough time for moments like these. To relax into chatter that didn't have to be practical or goal-oriented.
"You are so beautiful," she said.
Steph batted her lashes, and they broke out into a chuckle.
"About what you said earlier, though," Steph said. "Let's leave Solange out of it and set a time right here, right now."
"Okay."
Dominique reached for her phone on the nightstand, which had mercifully remained silent for the time they'd spent in bed. She pretended to look at her screen.
"How about tomorrow morning at 5?
She eyed Steph, waiting for her reaction.
"Don't do that."
"Do what?"
Dominique had trouble suppressing a grin.
"Try to make me into a morning person. We've tried. We must accept it's not going to happen. My libido doesn't wake up until well past midday."
"I'm afraid I have no free time until..."
Dominique did consult her schedule this time. "Late tomorrow evening. Unless you want to swing by my office between a cabinet meeting and the EU diplomatic gala."
"Gala? Nothing I have to attend, I hope. This is the first I've heard of it."
There was a hint of a tremor in Steph's tone.
"Madame Moreau would have told you long ago if your presence was required."
Not long into Dominique's presidency, she and Steph had decided that Steph would attend as few official functions as possible. Dominique had no need for a trophy wife by her side. Besides, they weren't even married. And Steph naturally shied away from such events.
"I'm having dinner with Zoya tomorrow night."
Steph's face relaxed.
"You seem to have taken to her."
"You know just as well as I do that I have a taste for more mature ladies now."
She plastered a big grin on her face.
Dominique arched up her eyebrows.
Don't I know it, she said.
Must have been some mature lady to have swayed you in that direction.
She's quite something.
Steph's finger was close to Dominique's mouth.
In fact, she's the president of France. Obviously, I can't be swayed by any mere mortal.
Obviously. Dominique lowered her chin so she could kiss Steph's finger. She could still smell herself on it.
Dominique hesitated to express the next thought that popped into her mind, but in the end, she couldn't keep the words from crossing her lips.
Have you considered the question, said President, put to you in this very bed 2 weeks ago?
Dominique witnessed how the muscles in Steph's face tensed up. A short silence fell between them. I don't understand why it's so important for you to get married again, Steph said.
I want to be married to you.
Dominique was well aware of how cheesy she came across. She didn't particularly like the sound of her words, but she didn't know how else to persuade Steph other than expressing her love for her like this. I've never made a secret of the fact that I'm just not the marrying kind, babe.
There was clear exasperation in Steph's voice now. You know this. A girl can still dream.
Dominique looked away for a minute. She hadn't made a big spectacle of asking Steph to marry her. She had simply asked her on a night very much like this one. One of the rare occasions when she had a night off from her duties and could linger in bed with her partner. The thought had crossed her mind quite a few times since they'd moved into the Élysée, and it had crystallized into a simple question to which, truth be told, Dominique had known the answer in advance. But she had to ask. On the odd chance that Steph had changed her mind, that being with Dominique had convinced her that there was unprecedented joy to be found in calling yourself someone's wife. I don't need some flimsy piece of paper to prove my love for you.
It's not about the piece of paper,
Dominique wanted to say, but held her tongue. She knew not to push, and to enjoy this precious moment free of the obligations they were sharing. But, just like any other thought that had ever originated as a tiny germ of an idea in Dominique's head, she knew she wouldn't stop fighting until she got what she wanted. She was the president of the greatest nation on earth, after all. Steph. Not even the president can put a ring on Stephanie Matisse, Steph said, hoping the lightness she was trying to inject into her voice was coming through.
Dominique looked at her with an expression on her face that Steph knew all too well.
We'll see, it said. If Steph wasn't careful about this, Dominique's tenacity could turn this into a contest of stubbornness, after which it would become completely ludicrous and have little to do with the joy of being married. I love you. I'm here with you. Isn't that enough? Steph asked.
Dominique nodded. I was just checking whether Margot proposing to Claire had put any fresh ideas into your head.
Try me again after the wedding.
Steph couldn't help but tease.
She and Dominique were rarely serious for more than 5 minutes together. Dominique had to keep a straight face for the better part of the day, and if not that, paint on one of her dazzling but practiced smiles. Between them, Steph wanted Dominique's smiles to be completely genuine.
I'm going to hold you to that.
I wouldn't expect anything else from you.
Steph let her finger resume its earlier interrupted path. She skated it just beneath Dominique's exquisite mouth.
Sometimes when she was watching Dominique's face, she wondered what it had been that had drawn her to Dominique like that. What had kept her coming back for more, and then some? Being with Dominique was a challenge. It had been when they first met, and it certainly was now. But it was a good kind of challenge. The kind no other woman had previously been able to present Steph with. Apart from that, President Dominique Laroche was, of course, also gorgeous, strong, morally unambiguous, and so incredibly sweet at times, Steph wasn't always sure it was the same woman she was spending time with. Then again,
the woman she saw on television so often with that winning smile and no-nonsense demeanor, was a far cry from the woman lying in bed with her now. Dominique was still so endlessly fascinating to her. Why ruin all of that by doing as pedestrian a thing as marrying each other? And what would be next? Dominique wanting to have a child with Steph? So, when's the next time I'm allowed to sexually service the president? Steph dragged her finger down Dominique's chin, along her neck, in the direction of her breasts. She was up for another round. How about the president sexually serving you? The grin Dominique shot her ignited a fire in Steph's belly. I could think of no greater earthly pleasure. Steph paused. And honor, of course, even though she made it sound like a joke. There was truth in what she said. No matter how much she tried to convince herself otherwise, Steph got a not-so-secret thrill out of having the person holding the highest office in the country go down on her. Then I'd best get to it. Dominique kissed her on the mouth and let her tongue slip inside Steph's mouth. Steph blinked her eyes open. She'd been vaguely aware of Dominique getting up when her alarm went off, but as usual, Steph had turned on her other side and drifted back into sleep. Whether Dominique had kissed her goodbye or not, she had no idea. When they'd first begun waking up together in this strange bedroom in their new home, Steph had made an effort to wake herself up and catch an elusive snuggle. But she had soon learned her efforts were fruitless, because there simply wasn't time for kisses and hugs in the morning. Dominique barely had time to see her children, let alone embrace her partner before she faced another hectic day. Steph relished the moment of solitude. She had some time before she had to be at work, if she could even still call it that. She hadn't wanted to give up her job at Barbier and Cyr for the time that Dominique was president. She was a partner now. But being France's first lady presented her with a whole new set of challenges on the work front. When she met new clients, they had to get used to her being just Steph, the PR professional, as opposed to the woman they saw in the newspaper next to the president. Claire and Juliette loved it, of course, because having Steph involved with their firm had raised their bottom line significantly. Everyone wanted to be associated with a firm that had helped get the president elected. Not just because of the win, but because of what Dominique stood for. A fresh wind. A new era of politics. And no one more than Steph symbolized this fresh image. The younger woman Dominique Laroche had chosen to be with, against everyone's advice. Thank goodness Claire and Juliette were her best friends and knew Steph couldn't deal with just having a token function and being paraded around to get the firm more business. She worked behind the scenes more, which suited her just fine in these times when she was thrust into the limelight too often. Steph heard the creak of the bedroom door as it was being pushed open further. She had learned the hard way to quickly cover her naked body when this happened. They had live-in staff now, and although they were trained to be utterly discreet, this had been an adjustment for Steph either way. The creak was followed by a meow, and Steph exhaled. She probably gave her old cat more credit than he deserved, but she would give him an extra long chin scratch for knowing exactly when to come into the bedroom for a visit. He jumped onto the bed, then straight into Steph's lap. "Hello, my handsome boy," Steph said as she scratched him behind the ears, eliciting an instant purr. "My big presidential cat. Did you catch anything in the night?" Pierrot pushed the back of his head against her hand. Steph was sorry she couldn't ask him what he thought about the move from her tiny studio apartment to this palace. She assumed, for her sake, her cat considered it a vast life improvement. "Camille, thank you so much for meeting me." Camille kissed Zoya on the lips. "I really had to see your face and get out of there." She exhaled for what felt like the first time today. Any excuse to spend time with you is a good one. Zoya flashed her a smile that Camille needed very much. She put a hand on Camille's arm and Camille relaxed a little more.
Bad day at the office?
Camille shook her head. The worst.
Do you want to talk about it?
Zoya's voice was so kind. So unlike what Camille had to deal with these days in the building just around the corner.
Not really. Because it's the same old thing since I came out.
Camille desperately wanted a glass of wine, but wasn't sure if she should have one in case Duflo smelled it on her breath when she returned to work after lunch, and decided to use that against her as well.
I thought scientists were supposed to be the most enlightened bunch.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Everyone can be a bigot.
You don't need a scientist to prove that, I'm afraid. Not even a journalist, Zoya said.
I don't even think he's that much of a bigot. I think he's just using my coming out as a pawn in his quest for my job, which he has been after for a long time. It just... Camille looked around for a waiter. She was keen to place her order, wine included.
Hurts that someone is willing to use my love for you to further their own career. And that he might possibly get away with it.
He won't. There's no way. He's not fit to be a manager, let alone advise the government.
He might not be fit, but he's been able to sway a bunch of people whom I was certain were in my corner to turn against me.
There's always a last resort. The waiter finally came to take their order.
No way. I'm not talking to Dominique about this.
They had discussed this before. It was a preposterous idea in many ways. Not least that concerns about Camille's well-being at work were well below Dominique's pay grade.
You don't have to talk to her. I'm seeing Steph tonight. I could casually mention it. She's bound to ask how you're doing. It would be so easy to slip into the conversation.
I can fight my own battles.
I don't doubt it. I hate to see you this miserable because of some douchebag at work who has a problem with a female boss.
It's part of my job to rise above that. It comes with the territory.
It's not as if I haven't dealt with people like him before. When I got the job, a lot of the men probably took it as a blow to their masculinity.
Zoya laughed.
Oh, I know all about that. Sadly, this bullshit is still a reality in this day and age. But at least the president is a woman.
The waiter brought their wine and Camille eagerly poured them each a glass.
Just a drop for me, Zoya said. I'm driving.
How goes the foreign corresponding today? Now that she had a glass of wine in front of her, Camille was glad to talk about something other than the power struggle at work.
I'm doing a piece on butter, if you can believe it.
I can very well believe it, my love. Camille sipped from the wine and looked at her partner, who had moved many miles to be with her, and tuned into the gratitude she always felt when she stole a glance at Zoya. She was doing much more than stealing a glance right now. She was drinking in the radiant gloss of her skin, the tenderness in her eyes, the fullness of her lips. If some insecure bastard at work felt threatened, his white male privilege under attack because she loved this woman, then she would be even smarter, even better, and 10 times the woman she'd already had to be to get the position instead of a man. Being with Zoya emboldened her. She'd come out at work mere weeks after Zoya had moved to Paris. She'd brought her to the CNRS annual staff party and had, truth be told, flaunted her gorgeous partner around. Why wouldn't she? She was proud to be seen with Zoya. Proud of their love and how it made her feel. Camille had no idea the flaunting would have turned people against her like that.
Wish I could join you and Steph tonight, Camille said after a beat of silence.
I'll tell her you said hi, while I try to swing that interview with Dominique.
Don't abuse your friendship to get a coup.
Camille smiled at Zoya. She knew she was only kidding.
Who? Me?
Zoya batted her lashes.
I am the pinnacle of journalistic integrity.
And who knows, maybe I can keep her at ours long enough and you'll catch her when you get home. hours. Zoya had been living with Camille for 5 months now, yet it still sent a shiver up her spine when Zoya referred to her house as theirs. A shiver of pure delight, of acknowledging how lucky Camille had been to run into Zoya the way she had. How utterly elated that Zoya was willing to leave behind her homeland to be with Camille and her children and grandchild. Camille had no idea how she could ever repay Zoya for all the sacrifices she had already made. For her. Spending Christmas in the Australian summer sunshine was hardly a punishment. "It's going to be a late one," Camille said. "These board meetings always are. Well then, it'll just be me and Iris waiting for you. One of us naked." She put her hand on Camille's arm again, and at the prospect, Camille forgot all about the existence of Bernard Duflot. Zoya. Zoya added a splash of wine to her sauce. When she had prepared her first meal in France, it had felt like sacrilege to use actual French wine for cooking, but Camille had quickly persuaded her that wine was not wasted when you used it in a sauce. The whole purpose of wine was to enhance things. Dishes. Conversations. Life. When Camille had said this, looking at her from under her lashes the way she did, Zoya had believed her. She had clung to Camille's every last word. And she'd always remember how she had stood there, a hip slanted against the kitchen counter when she had spoken those words. Gorgeous. Smart. Sophisticated Camille. An inadvertent smile grew on Zoya's lips. A private smile that warmed her core. Not aimed at anyone but her inner self. Zoya lowered the heat and listened to the sizzle of the wine evaporating. She took joy in being able to cook for someone else again. Although tonight she wasn't cooking for her partner, she was preparing her signature dish for Stephanie Matisse. Steph always reminded Zoya of the unexpected path life could take you on. 2 years ago, after Rebecca had left her, Zoya could never have imagined living in Paris and serving a meal to France's first lady, let alone becoming fast friends with her. Equally, Steph had confided that she sometimes lay awake at night, wondering at the course her life had taken. Perhaps this was one of the building blocks of their friendship, and it was what they recognized in each other as it deepened. Zoya heard vehicles in the street coming to a halt, which must mean Steph had arrived. With the way of the world right now, Steph couldn't move about freely in her own city anymore. She had to be protected, discreetly, but that didn't make it less so by a Secret Service car. As Zoya had quickly learned when they first went to a restaurant together, Steph was always followed by a few not-so-discreet photographers wanting to document her every move in public. "Christ," Zoya had said. "I thought the French paparazzi were more considerate than that." "Paps are relentless wolves everywhere," Steph had said matter-of-factly, indicating she didn't want to spend any more time even discussing these people for whom making that one money shot meant infinitely more than the privacy every human being was entitled to, even the president's partner. Zoya made her way to the door and waited for the knock. The first time the vultures had descended on their house, she had been taken aback by the lewdness of it all, but she had also very quickly understood why Steph preferred to meet here instead of in a public place. Once the paparazzi realized she was meeting a friend at home, they would leave, knowing there was no sensational shot to be had. Someone rapped on the door twice, and Zoya quickly opened it, ushering Steph in and dispensing with the niceties until they stood behind the safety of closed doors. "Bonsoir." Steph grabbed her by the shoulders and planted a kiss on each of Zoya's cheeks. She seemed unperturbed by the spectacle outside. "Lovely to see you," Zoya replied. "Come through to the kitchen. I think the sauce needs stirring and tasting." Zoya went through the motions of pouring Steph a glass of wine and sitting her down in the kitchen while she finished her dish. Steph was halfway through her glass when they sat down to dinner, and Zoya spooned a portion of mushroom pasta onto Steph's plate.
"How's life in the Elysee?" Zoya asked.
The question had become a private joke between them, Zoya being the seasoned interviewer who lowered herself to asking the most obvious basic question.
Same old, silver spoons and manservants.
Steph replied with a grin on her face.
This looks delicious. Nothing but the best for the first lady.
Zoya marveled at the smell of the earthy chanterelles and the hint of wine she could still catch in the sauce.
Although I have been thinking about the term first lady with regards to you and Dominique. If you're the first lady, then which number lady is she? None of this protocol stuff was ever invented for lesbians, obviously.
Steph rolled her eyes.
Who could even imagine such a thing? Two women in the Elysee? Such sacrilege.
She paused for a moment.
I will have to break the news to Dominique that, because of my title, she can only officially be Second Lady of France. It's not going to go down well.
She painted a smirk on her face.
She may introduce some law to change this anomaly pronto, so maybe I should just leave it.
Zoya snickered. She hadn't had the pleasure of spending that much time with the president, who had far more important things to do than dine with friends who were not heads of state. But she could, nevertheless, easily catch Steph's drift.
Anyway, let's not talk about my uneventful life, Steph said, changing the subject. Let's talk about you. How are you doing?
Zoya might be the interviewer with years of experience under her belt, but when Steph asked her a question, even one as straightforward and predictable as this, she always felt it was born from more than just friendly interest. As though Steph had a sixth sense and instinctively noticed when something was a little off. Or perhaps that was just Zoya projecting, or feeling relieved that she could chat to a friend. She hadn't made that many. Language was still a barrier, but Steph belonged to the younger generation who spoke excellent English. From the very beginning, Zoya had felt she could communicate with Steph on a level she needed. She could be frank with her.
Well, you know, I'm in love, and I live in Paris, often coined the most beautiful city in the world, so one would think I'm doing swimmingly. Except you're not.
Steph waited, fork poised.
I'm not doing badly. I mean, this is what I wanted after all. But I do miss home more than I expected.
It's normal. I only moved districts and I miss home terribly at times, Steph said after she finished her bite.
I know it's normal. I lived in Australia all my life, and I can't expect love to just magically make everything better. I guess the bigger issue is that I don't really know how to talk to Camille about it, for fear I'll ruin our honeymoon period.
Why? You think she won't understand?
Zoya looked at Steph and again saw some of herself in her much younger friend. The inability to let anything just go by. The ever-present need to ask a deeper question. Zoya shook her head.
No, of course she will understand. I just want to spare her my drama. She has enough on her plate.
Steph narrowed her eyes.
Can you actually hear yourself, Zoya? She's your partner, which doesn't mean you have to tell her every little thing that goes on in your mind, but you should be able to talk about things that infringe on your happiness.
In theory, I know you're right.
Zoya sipped from her glass of wine.
I guess I've been taken aback a little myself by the fierceness of my feelings. I've even started watching Neighbours again, just to feel that connection to home.
Steph quirked up her eyebrows.
Scott and Charlene?
Zoya asked, and when met with a blank expression on Steph's face, continued.
It's an Australian soap that had its heyday long before your time, she smiled. But as harrowing as watching something well past its prime is, it anchors me to my homeland. And even saying words like anchoring and homeland makes me wonder whether I'm even cut out for this uprooting of my life. I barely gave it a second thought because of how utterly smitten I was. I still am.
It's only been a few months. You need to give yourself some time, and you need to speak with Camille. You can't let something as important as this turn into more and have it fester into even more negative emotions.
If for some reason your career in PR doesn't work out, you can always retrain as a counselor, Zoya said.
Step was quiet for a beat, then said, I see one. A counselor. Have done for a while. Even though C is perhaps not the right word for it. These days we mainly have online sessions. Lest it ever come out, the First Lady needs her soul examined on a regular basis.
It was Zoya's turn to look at Steph with a bewildered look on her face. Their friendship must have reached a new height if Steph was comfortable sharing this.
It has really helped me.
Steph filled the silence.
If you need to talk to someone, I can definitely recommend her.
I'll think about it.
Good.
Steph said it with so much persuasion, Zoya almost asked for the counselor's number there and then. Before Zoya could say anything else, she heard the door open. It could only be Camille.
She's home early.
Zoya instinctively rose from her chair. Camille was talking to someone. Maybe she was on the phone. Then she heard another voice. One she recognized easily because she'd heard it on the radio many times. Even though she only understood a tiny portion of what was said on Rossov's weekly show, Sexualité Aujourd'hui, she used it to further her knowledge of the French language, and had picked up quite a few words no course book would ever teach her. Hey, darling. Camille ambled into the dining room with Aurore in tow. We have company. Aurore. Even though Camille had told Aurore that Stéphanie Matisse would be at her house, she was a little starstruck when she stood face to face with the woman. It wasn't so much that she was a president's partner, but more the reputation that preceded her and the vibe of sexual confidence she exuded. Why could Aurore never fall for a woman like that? Then she wouldn't have had her heart broken again, which was why she had called Camille. Camille, who had just fled a board meeting, told Aurore she would introduce her to Stéphanie Matisse to cheer her up. Aurore took Stéphanie's hand, then greeted Zoya in English. I wasn't expecting you home so soon, Zoya said to Camille. I'll tell you all about the hell of a meeting I just walked out of later, she said. First, we must make Aurore feel better. Camille winked at Aurore. For some reason, Camille had always succeeded in making Aurore feel better during her long and disastrous career in love. Although this was the first time Aurore would avail of her cheering up services since Zoya had moved to Paris, and she wasn't sure how this new love on display would affect the healing process of her shattered heart. She hadn't given it a second thought when she had dialed Camille's number. It was that instinctive. Relationship over? Call Camille.
Are you the Rossov? Stéphanie asked.
I'm afraid so, Aurore said. For all my talk of sex positivity and healthy relationships on national radio, my own love life has been a mess for as long as I've had one. If you could even call it one.
Stéphanie grinned.
Your secret's safe with me.
The way she said it made Aurore believe it instantly. Maybe Stéphanie had a friend like herself she could introduce to Aurore. Someone to make her forget about Viviane. But no, unshakable types like Stéphanie Matisse, no matter how charming they were, didn't really float Aurore's boat. That was the problem.
Just a lifelong commitment to falling for the wrong woman, Aurore joked. It takes dedication.
What kind of woman might that be?
Stéphanie asked, while Zoya poured her and Camille a glass of wine.
Emotionally unavailable, Aurore said.
Camille cleared her throat.
What Aurore actually means by that is straight women.
She opened her hands, palms upwards.
Désolé, mon ami, Camille continued. But I've known you for many decades, and let's just call a spade, shall we?
Aurore sighed.
My profession doesn't help, of course.
She tried to ignore Camille's comment. Even though one of the pillars of their 20 years plus friendship was Camille's unflinching ability to tell it how it was. Although there had been a time not so long ago when Aurore had been the one to tell Camille that she herself wasn't perhaps as heterosexual as she had everyone, herself included, believe.
Straight women love to project their lesbian fantasies onto me.
That doesn't mean you have to let them.
There was kindness in Camille's voice, and she put a hand on Aurore's shoulder.
Maybe I'm just too much of a sucker for a good transformation story.
She glanced at Camille, then at Zoya.
Look at you, ladies. You're living proof that not all women who have always believed they're straight actually are.
That might be true, Camille said.
But you could try dating a woman who could at least reciprocate your feelings. Imagine how much fun it would be. Two women who love women falling in love.
Aurore smiled at Camille just to indulge her, then looked at Steph.
Even our first female president believed she was straight for the longest time. There are so many examples.
Stephanie shook her head.
I don't mean to speak out of turn, especially because we've only just met, she said. But I think you're getting some things confused.
If I could have helped it at all, I would have never fallen for someone like Dominique. How it happened for me was the other way around. I fell in love with her despite her not being an out lesbian, not because.
Touché, Camille said.
I think you hit the nail on the head there, Steph. I thought being here was supposed to cheer me up, Aurore said. Not tear me down even more than Viviane has already done.
You're right, Camille said.
As long as next time you meet someone you're interested in, you get my approval before you date her.
She sent Aurore a grin.
Aurore held up her glass and looked Camille in the eye.
No one will enter my bed until they passed your rigorous vetting process first.
We'll set up a panel, Zoya said.
I can get you a presidential seal of approval if needed, Stephanie said.
They all burst out laughing, and with that, Aurore did start feeling a little better.
As long as she could stay in this cozy, even though a tattoo bourgeois for her taste living room a while longer, in the embrace of her old friend, Camille's partner, and the First Lady of France. She wondered if tonight's conversation would make it to the president's ears, whether she would be the subject of pillow talk at the Élysée tonight. She should really get a grip and start dating actual lesbians, or at the very least, a woman who had kissed another woman before.
If you know of any eligible lesbian bachelorette, Stephanie, please let me know.
Please call me Steph, she said and paused before answering the question. I don't really travel in those circles anymore. If you'd asked me 2 years ago, I could have hooked you up in a heartbeat. But not so much now.
Do you mean the Élysée is not swarming with lesbians now that we have a lesbian president? There goes my fantasy.
What fantasy? Zoya asked.
Lesbian orgies in the Élysée every other day?
God, no. No such thing.
Just some good old lesbian nepotism. You know, to once and for all drive home the gay agenda. At least, that's what the far right would like to have us believe.
If you ask me, Serine Maréchal is a closet case herself.
Camille said. Steph chuckled. Dominique would have a fit if she heard all of this.
Will you tell her?
Aurore couldn't help but ask. On her radio show, she asked people about their most private emotions all the time. Compared to that, this was just skimming the surface.
Do you talk to Dominique about evenings like this?
Steph sank her teeth into her bottom lip and regarded Aurore for a moment in silence before speaking.
Of course, if there's time.
Aurore painted on a smile, the kind she would use on a studio guest if they were still balancing on that edge between being too shy and really wanting to share something profound.
Is there?
Not always. Not as much as I would like there to be, Steph said.
Is that an issue for you?
Aurore had a vague sense of crossing a line. She wasn't in the studio after all. She was sharing a glass of wine with friends after a bad breakup.
Zoya interviewed me a while back about all of this, Steph said.
You can find all the answers to your questions on YouTube. She tilted her head and kept her gaze on Aurore, as if asking, Are you done now?
I'm so sorry, Aurore said. I've always been the curious type.
Nosy, more like, Camille said.
It's in our blood, Zoya said.
What happened with you and Viviane? Steph asked. The room fell silent.
What? You two can be nosy and I can't be?
The grin on her face was irresistible. A frank answer to Steph's question would be an opportunity to apologize and to say some much-needed words about the woman who had just broken her heart.
she went back to her ex, whom she'd left for me.
Ouch, Steph said. I'm very sorry. How long were you together?
Almost 6 months, Aurore sighed. I thought we were ready for the next stage of our relationship.
She clearly didn't.
She sipped wine. But hey, at least it was only 6 months, which means, according to publications like Marie Claire, it should only take me 3 months to get over her.
Her phone started ringing in her handbag. She dug it out, by now already relieved she could take a break from talking about Viviane. It might only have been 6 months, but the memory of Viviane looking her in the eye and saying she was leaving still had the power to wound. It felt like a blade sliding between her ribs straight into her heart.
Again.
I'm sorry, I have to take this.
Aurore excused herself and took the call from Député Riviere in the kitchen. They had a big day tomorrow, and her heartache would have to wait. Dominique heard a barely audible knock on the door and immediately identified it as Solange's. She had told her chief of staff to knock harder so many times, she didn't have it in her to repeat it anymore.
Come!
She said in her most booming voice, hoping the power behind it would inspire Solange to make her nonverbal communication a bit more forceful. The woman was plenty forceful in other areas. Solange walked in, wearing her usual attire, a black pencil skirt, black blazer, and white blouse. Dominique sometimes wondered whether if she were ever to find herself staring into Solange's wardrobe, she would find a neatly arranged row of black skirt suits and white blouses. The socialists just introduced a bill in the Assemblée, one that might give us a hard time. She put a sheet of paper on Dominique's desk. Just tell me. Dominique didn't even glance at the paper. Opening up the use of donor sperm to single women and same-sex partners, Solange said. Dominique puffed some air out of her mouth.
The party is going to love that.
Who's behind it?
Riviere.
Of course. They blindsided us, which means they want to have this be a make-or-break issue.
They want to test me.
Dominique leaned back in her chair. Smart move. What do you want to do?
Nothing right now. I need to think.
She closed her eyes for a moment. Being president was, most of all, a delicate balancing act of trying to keep everyone at peace. It didn't matter right now that Dominique was all for making donor sperm available for everyone. Riviere might be all for it as well, but that didn't take away that this was, most of all, a political maneuver by the new leader of the socialists, who had finally gotten rid of old Crocodile Gauffin and lately, had felt invigorated by the fresh wind breezing through their party, spearheaded by charismatic Anne Riviere. When the next election came up, mercifully still 2.5 years away, she would need to take up arms against two women vying for her spot. She was certain she could wipe out Maréchal. She wasn't so certain about Riviere. Solange lingered.
Anything else? Dominique asked. Do you really want to know?
Her chief of staff wasn't the kind of person whose sense of humor manifested itself very often, and Dominique knew this was her idea of a joke.
No.
Dominique shook her head and managed a small smile.
You deal with all the rest.
She watched Solange trot to the door on her impossibly high heels. Shoes so impractical Dominique had no idea why any woman would wear them, and pondered how much she relied on this woman. Steph was 100% correct when she said Dominique spent more time with Solange than with her. This reminded her of the conversation she had had with her partner 2 days ago.
Before you go, Solange.
Solange stopped and turned around.
Yes?
Have you seen Steph?
Is she at the office today or here?
In the beginning, Dominique had tried to keep Steph's schedule in her head, or at least somewhere near her so she could at least pretend to keep up. But too many other matters vied for her attention, and she had people who were paid to know about these things. No matter how counterintuitive it was to ask someone else about the whereabouts of her partner.
Haven't seen her. I think she's at Babier & Cyr all day. I'll double check and let you know.
Okay,
Thanks.
The door closed, and Dominique's thoughts drifted first to ultra-progressive Riviere, who would easily sway back to her all the voters Dominique had been able to poach from the left because of her predecessor's flagrant incompetence. But the age of incompetence was over for the socialists. In Anne Riviere, they had found someone passionate, charismatic, and possessed with just the right amount of feminism to not scare off too many men. The next election might still be years away, but Dominique needed the legacy of a strong presidency if she were to take on the likes of Riviere, who knew very well what the MLR's party line was on this particular subject. Then she thought of Steph, a socialist at heart, who didn't hide her admiration for Riviere. As president, Dominique no longer joined debates in the Assemblée, but she would have her work cut out for her debating this particular bill at home. Steph. Have you heard? Juliette's blonde head popped up in the doorway of Steph's office.
Heard what?
A small headache beat at the base of her skull. She had stayed at Zoya and Camille's a bit too long, indulging the excellent pouet fumé they had served. She was no longer in her 20s, and even the best wine could leave her with a hammering hangover these days. It had been a pleasant evening, and she had enjoyed getting to know Arosov, who was a woman after her own heart. Sexually open-minded, at least on her radio show, although perhaps not so much in her private life. Ideas that naturally fell on the left side of the political spectrum, just like Steph's, even though she was currently not at liberty to express these ideas outside the confines of, ironically, a right-wing-led Élysée. Riviere is introducing a bill to the Assemblée, Juliette said, to finally allow all female couples and single women to avail of sperm donations. This is going to make her very popular and give someone else a massive headache, Juliette grinned. Unfortunately, it's too late for me. But if this had been possible 10 years ago, who knows? There might be a little Juliette Barbier walking around right now. Or a tiny Nadia.
The bill needs to pass first.
Steph knew all about Juliette's sudden wish for a child a few years ago, just when she and Nadia were going through a rocky patch in their relationship. She didn't want to rack all of that up again. I take it you'll contact our client about this? Juliette sat in a chair opposite Steph.
This is going to do her head in. And mine, Steph said.
You'll both get through it. There's no choice. This needs to happen, Steph. It should have happened years ago.
Your career in PR is long enough to know this could end up being a disaster for Dominique.
We are the queens of spin. We'll find a way to get her through this unscathed.
Queens of spin? Steph rolled her eyes.
It was an option we were coming up with names for the firm. Juliette's eyes sparkled.
I would never have joined you then.
Good thing we kept it safely and boringly at Barbier and Cyr.
Speaking of, where's Cyr today? Haven't seen her all day.
Day off. No doubt driving Margot crazy being a bridezilla. I'm sure Margot already regrets having asked. Claire is not one to have a small and discreet wedding.
Dominique asked me again.
Steph said after a short pause during which she could easily picture the scene of Claire overwhelming Margot with ludicrous demands for the perfect wedding day. That makes two proposals, Juliette said. She must be serious about it.
I just fail to see what the big deal is. Besides, she doesn't have time to get married.
I'm no expert on Dominique's private feelings. But my best guess is this has nothing to do with it being a big deal or having time for it. It's just a pure expression of her love for you. She wants to be your wife.
I can't be somebody's wife, Jules. That's just not me.
It's a special feeling, you know. It's hard to explain, but I just love the idea of being married, even though I used to be just like you. Well, maybe not just like you. She tapped her fingers on the armrest of the chair. I never felt any need to get married to Nadia. What was the point? We were as good as married already.
but now we are married and no longer as good as married. It makes a difference to me.
You're not doing a very good job of convincing me, Jules. Your pro-marriage stance needs better PR.
Talk to Claire, then.
God, no. I'm not mentioning the M-word anywhere near Claire these days. I don't feel like listening to a detailed breakdown of her seating plan, and which cheesy music will be played at the ceremony.
Maybe you just don't like weddings.
I was raised by a single mother. Marriage and weddings were never revered in my family the way they are in others. I just couldn't care less.
Clearly Dominique cares a great deal.
Clearly. Steph rolled her head from side to side. Anyway, I'd best call home. See how our president is taking the news.
Steph had been waiting for Dominique to come to bed for an hour already. She put the book she'd been reading to the side and switched on the television. A rerun of the late-night news had just started. And the first item was the introduction of the Rivière Bill. Sperm donation for same-sex couples was a difficult topic in France. But the new socialist leader was milking it for all it was worth. Steph admired her from a professional point of view as well as from a political, and even personal one. What she was doing took guts as well as a strategic political mind. Steph tried to erase that cynical thought from her brain, but she'd been in PR and lately, in politics too long to see this for what it ultimately would be. Thousands of women wouldn't have to leave France to find a sperm donor anymore. Their life would become a whole lot easier, and their fundamental right to have a child would no longer be ignored by the state. Anne Riviere was being interviewed. She stood tall and smiled into the camera. This was her moment. The first shot fired in the war for the next presidential election. Some voters may believe Anne Riviere was doing this solely out of the goodness of her heart, and her heart may very well be in the right place, but this was as much a sign to Dominique. This was Anne Riviere saying she meant business, and goading Dominique into a response, into saying something she wouldn't otherwise have to say, into taking a clear stance she knew was difficult for a president and leader of a right-wing party. The game was on. Steph peered at her. She was a good speaker with excellent delivery, nothing like her predecessor Goffin. The camera panned out as the interview ended, and one of her aides appeared briefly on the screen. Steph blinked and looked again. She knew that face. She'd only recently been able to put a name to it. Last night, to be exact. She paused the broadcast and rewound a few seconds, until the screen froze on an image of Aurore Sauve. Aurore had advocated on her radio show for years for this legislation to be brought forward. She must have advised Riviere on the bill.
"I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry," Dominique whirled into the room. "Sorry that I asked you to wait and then didn't come up for so long."
Steph waved off Dominique's comment.
"Can you believe that I met this woman last night?"
She pointed at the screen.
"Which woman? Riviere? Have you been courting socialists behind my back?"
Dominique waggled her eyebrows. She didn't seem too perturbed by today's events. She had many more delicate and difficult things on her plate.
"No, the one behind Riviere, Aurore Sauve, the radio host."
"The one who does the show about sex?"
Dominique sat on the edge of the bed.
"Yes, she's a friend of Camille's. I met her at theirs last night. She didn't say anything at all about this. Didn't let on she was involved with Riviere at all."
"She wouldn't have. This had to be a surprise."
"I'm still impressed with her poker face."
Seeing Aurore on television next to Riviere reshaped Steph's view of her. Not that it was impossible for a person to be heartbroken and in need of friends. At the same time as preparing a bill that would make the president's complicated life a little harder still. But it did say something about her. There was a ruthlessness to Aurore Sauve that had not been on display the night before. A hidden side that, if she was honest with herself, impressed Steph.
"What was she like? Did she ask about our sex life?"
Dominique brought her hand to the back of Steph's head. She was mainly venting about her girlfriend leaving her. Dominique scooted closer to Steph while her fingers caressed her scalp.
I don't much feel like talking about left-wing lesbians anymore, babe. Nor do I want to think about sperm donations before I go to bed. Can you turn off the TV?
She kissed Steph on the temple.
Let's talk tomorrow.
She slid onto her back. Steph switched off the television and looked at Dominique.
You're still fully dressed.
Who cares about some wrinkled clothes?
The people who live in this palace with us simply love to iron.
So much ironing goes on in here. It's obscene.
Steph chuckled. Dominique's eyes were already closed.
I care a great deal.
She started unbuttoning Dominique's blouse.
Thank you, chérie, she murmured. Je t'aime.
By the time Steph had maneuvered Dominique's trousers off, Dominique was fast asleep.
Camille.
Your friend Aurore pulled a fast one on me,
Steph said into Camille's ear.
Camille usually only took calls on her mobile at work if it was one of her children or Zoya, but she figured she'd best make an exception for the First Lady.
What do you mean?
She advised Riviere on that bill.
I saw her on the news last night.
I had no idea she dabbled in politics, Camille.
I would have appreciated a heads up.
Was there a sharp edge of blame in Steph's voice?
Aurore and I don't discuss politics. It's what keeps our friendship healthy.
She sat right across from me for the better part of the evening, knowing all along that the next day Riviere would introduce a bill that would put Dominique in a bad spot. When she took that call in the kitchen, she was probably talking to Riviere about it.
Aurore is a friend who needed to see some friendly faces last night, Steph. I think you're reading a bit too much into her being at ours. She didn't know you were going to be there when she called me.
I just find it a bit too glaring a coincidence, that's all.
She's been my friend for a very long time, and I don't like what you're insinuating.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to come down on you like this. I used to not give much of a damn about politics, and now my entire life revolves around it. It was just a bit of a shock seeing her with Riviere.
I understand, Steph, I do. But I don't think about politics when I introduce friends. Not anymore. And for your information, Aurore enjoyed meeting you. It took her mind off Vivienne.
If not handled delicately, this whole thing could turn into a PR nightmare for Dominique. Neither of the choices she has when reacting to this is straightforward.
Politics is not straightforward. But Dominique has defied her party once before. I'm sure she can find the strength to do it again.
It is a good bill, after all. A necessary one. If only it were that simple,
Steph said.
What if it were? Camille offered.
What if it really were that simple? Steph chuckled in her ear.
You've been out of the political arena for too long.
It hasn't gotten any easier or prettier since you divorced Jean-Claude. On the contrary, Dominique might be president, but that doesn't mean the more conservative MLR wolves aren't sharpening their teeth and waiting in the wings for her to slip up. In their eyes, at least. This is a nicely wrapped gift for them.
Do you want me to quiz Jean-Claude? See what he knows?
No, of course not. But what you can do is give me Aurore Sauve's number. I would like to have a chat with her.
Oh, she's going to love that.
Camille couldn't hide her glee. She would like to be a fly on the wall wherever that conversation took place.
I bet she is.
I'll text you her number.
Not I assume that you needed to call me to get it. Nah, I just called to scold you, obviously.
Steph let out a brief sigh.
I'm sorry for going off on you. I enjoyed meeting Aurore as well.
They rang off, and Camille sank back into her chair while she considered Aurore's motives. Aurore had no way of knowing Steph would be having dinner with Zoya last night when she called. Camille berated herself for even questioning her friend, who really had been cut up about losing yet another lover. She glanced at the clock. She had a meeting in 15 minutes. After she had texted Steph Aurore's number,
she decided to call up her old friend herself. Aurore picked up after the first ring.
Camille, I'm so glad to hear a friendly voice.
Likewise. Even though you got me in a pickle with